Hey friends, so before we get started on the show that I have for you this week, I just want to say that I hope that you and your loved ones are keeping well, that you're staying safe, taking all the necessary precautions. These are truly unprecedented times, and it can feel isolating, it can feel lonely, it can feel like there's no real light at the end of the tunnel. I live alone in a city that's currently under lockdown, and to be honest, it's been really, really difficult. But over the last few days, I've had the chance to speak to many of you, my friends, my family, and you inspire me. Each of your stories inspire me. You give me courage. We're all in this together, friends, and we're all going to come out of this much, much stronger. So let's share love, let's take all the necessary precautions, let's be there for each other during these really difficult and testing times. And before we get the show, I just want to take the time to say that I'm really thankful, for the love and support that you've shown me, and that I just want you to know that it truly means the world to me. So thank you. Welcome back to Millennial Musings, and as always, I'm your host, Anurag Ramchandran. So this week's episode is actually quite an anomaly. We'd recorded this several weeks in advance, but shortly thereafter, our lives completely turned upside down. The work from home turned into complete social isolation, turned into living under a full-blown lockdown. So as all our focus started turning into dealing with this catastrophe and living under its new circumstances, I just didn't feel right putting out an episode, a fun episode on mixed martial arts. And yet, while I found myself at my lowest over the last few days, I found myself returning back to this very episode that I had shunned. It's with two of my best friends, Samir and Shalaj, and it's just us talking about something that we truly and deeply love, mixed martial arts. So without further ado, on MMA with Shalaj and Samir. Thank you for tuning in. Boys, welcome to Millennial Musings. This has been a long time coming, like ever since, I guess, I started this podcast. This has been one of the biggest things that I've been looking forward to, is to talk about MMA with you guys. And it's just fascinating that it's my kind of my return podcast, and something that, you know, it took me a while to get back to doing. And for me, the comfort zone was, let me reach out to my boys and let's talk about things that we love. And clearly that's MMA for us.
But yeah, man, I mean, honestly, like, I'm super excited to talk. I don't think we ever talked about, like, MMA in person. It's usually been on, like, our little WhatsApp group chat. So, yeah, I'm excited.
Awesome. So, I guess, like, one of the biggest things for me is that not very many people that I know follow MMA as religiously as the three of us do. And so, having a little WhatsApp group, you know, checking in on by fighters week in and week out, and like making predictions and kind of pushing each other's buttons on like our favorite fighters and people we don't like, I think it's become such a ritualized part of my like weekend, because you know the fights usually happen on a Saturday or Sunday, and then we follow it up with like all our banter, that I think the best way to get started is to talk about when we actually started following the sport. And I think, Samir, you might be the one that has been following it for the longest time. And so why don't you tell us about how and when did you get into MMA?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think I got into MMA like maybe 6 years ago. And Ronda Rousey was definitely my introduction into MMA, because mm-hmm. back in 2014, she was a huge thing, right? She was just like destroying all her opponents. They were like first right. round victories, and they weren't even close. So I think one of my first memories that I distinctly remember was like she was having this fight on a Saturday night, and then I was supposed to like go watch this movie just before that. And then I was like, no, we have to like time this movie so that I can come back and watch the fight, and it's going to be a huge one. And I watched this movie, and then I'd like race back home to like watch the fight. And I don't remember the fight was against, but it was maybe it was like I forget who it was, but basically the fight got done in like 15 seconds, and I was like, well, that wasn't worth it. But then there was just something, you know, like this is something so like real and exciting about it. It's like it's unpredictable, right? Like even though it's a 15 second fight, and even though you've been waiting all day, like it is what it is. It's real. And yeah, that's what got me hooked into it.
Yeah, and I want to return back to what you just said. Like, it's real and unpredictable, and that's why we are hooked onto it. But before we go there, Shailaj, when is it that you started, like, really paying attention to the MMA world and following it closely?
Yeah, I had a question for you guys. So before I made a transition into UFC or MMA much later than both of you. I also know that the three of us were also the people who used to track WWE the most, even in our teenage life and then even into early adulthood. I think out of all the people I knew.
That's a very good observation.
Yeah, so do you think, okay, this is my question. So do you think that, like that, whatever, we were fans of WWE, we liked watching it. Do you think that translated into MMA, or this is a completely independent thing?
So I mean, okay, so here's my take on this, right? Like, yes, I was a fan of WWE. Yes, we all were fans of WWE. But, like, the way I got introduced to UFC was just a complete, like, coincidence, right? So this was I think it was, like, my freshman year or my sophomore year. But, yeah, so sometime around then. But it was, I believe, GSP versus either Nick Diaz or somebody else. I'm not really certain on who the fight was with. But I still remember this. There was a guy, Kyle Johnson. Shout out, Kyle. He runs a GIF account on Twitter now. And I think he's the number one GIF maker of MMA. But shout out, Kyle Johnson. He had actually bought the pay-per-view that day. And he just invited like few of us over to watch the fight. And I, like, honestly, the group couldn't be more eclectic, right? Like, so there were people that had never watched any combat sports before. There were people like, there was somebody like me who would watch WWE, but had never heard of what mixed martial arts was, never heard of GSP, never heard of Nick Diaz. And then I was just hooked, right? Like, so we just sat there, like, completely glued to this guy's TV and unable to even move or, like, I don't even think we were communicating with each other. But that happened like completely randomly, you know, like you, in your freshman year when you meet like a bunch of people and everybody's like, hey, why don't we do this? Or why don't we do that? So I just chanced upon it. And since then, I haven't been able to like stop following the sport. So I don't know how much that theory holds, but what do you think, Samir? Like, do you think that WWE background also kind of got you to be more interested in combat sports in general?
I think it's definitely true that if you like WWE, you're also very likely to like UFC. Because I met a bunch of people that do like, you know, UFC and boxing, and they consider WWE to be fake, and that's why they're not interested in it. And obviously, I have like a lot of opinions on why, like, that's a ridiculous argument. But I do think that there's definitely some correlation between people that like WWE and UFC, just because it's like combat entertainment, right?
Interesting. Right. Yeah, so, okay, we'll come back to that. There's a lot of things to unpack. But anyway, I'll bring it back to why I brought it up. So I think my translation into MMA has mostly been from WWE. I was directly introduced to UFC directly from WWE because when I was watching it, CM Punk was a huge deal. And when CM Punk was having his Summer of Punk, which is like he had this massive phase where he was the thing. He decided to walk out with Chael Sonnen in his fight against Anderson Silva. And that's when I got exposed to the world of UFC because I was following everything CM Punk was doing. And I just knew about that fight, and I knew then Chael Sonnen lost it. Spoiler alert, a decade later. And then what started happening was I think even the WWE fans, I don't know, maybe it happened early as well. They also got introduced to UFC in a way. So the pages that I was following, like the meme accounts and all of those, also started sharing small, you know, clips of UFC fights. And at that point, Conor McGregor was climbing up the ranks of UFC, and there were a lot of clips of him trash talking, and there were equally the same amount of clips of Ronda Rousey having her first round knockouts. So all of those clips used to always make it through to my social media accounts, and I just, you know, I just used to like watching them. And my, I mean, I was just following them retroactively, just watching a clip after the fight is done, after the whole buzz is created. I remember Conor and Jose Aldo being like the big transition period where that fight was talked about so much. It was on all news websites and everyone was talking about it, that Conor's
everywhere. You couldn't escape it.
Yeah. And Ronda had also knocked out, I don't know, Exhibit A. I don't know. I don't know. She just knocked out a lot of people. So that was a time when I like really started getting into it, and Conor was the guy who drew me into it, because I guess coming from a WWE background, like I was more into the theatrical element, personas, you know, talk, hype men and things like that. And Conor was just like the right translation. He wasn't like the extreme end of it. He was like somewhere in the middle. So he was taking this sport, but he was adding WWE elements. He had a gimmick. He was playing a heel. So those kind of things really drew me in. But the first fight that I actually stayed back to watch, so I obviously joined in later than you guys, was Conor and Nate Diaz won. Yeah. And then after that fight, I was like, damn, I need to watch Nate Diaz 2. And that was an incredible fight. So that's how I got into it. Anyway, so that's my introduction. But one thing Sameer brought up was quite interesting was, so people who like WWE and you then transition into MMA, it can go two ways, right? Either you completely hate it because WWE is sports entertainment. It does not represent combat sports at all. It's fake. It's scripted. It's not unpredictable. Mm. People know the results long, long back, and you can kind of just figure the storylines going. And MMA is on the opposite end of the spectrum. So you can either really hate it, or you're right, there are traits that would probably match with fans of both these sports. Is that something?
Do you think that in addition to like it being one of these like, I mean, yes, it does translate, right? Like, okay, so similar idea of like people with character and personalities going against other people with characters and personalities, and the storyline is what draws us in, right? I think that's fair to say, like that there is an element of the storyline of, you know, maybe sometimes it's the bad boy versus the well-dressed and well-mannered person, or maybe it's the incredibly confident person against somebody that's very quiet and demure. So I guess that element of, I guess, just human behavior is what captured my attention. It was just, I remember almost immediately after watching like my first couple UFC fights or like checking it out on YouTube, but then almost immediately being drawn into seeing what these interviews with such fighters were like, right? So shout out Ariel Helwani, one of the best journalists in the MMA game. The GOAT. And I almost obsessively started watching his videos, and some of these were hilarious, where like he would just get bullied by some of the fighters, and the others where he would ask like deep meaningful questions. And so what do you guys think about like the people that make the sport, right? Like, I mean, obviously this is life or death when somebody enters the octagon, gets into a fight. Anything could happen: concussions, injuries, broken arms, broken legs. But outside of like the fighting element, and this is Shailaj touching on some of the things that you mentioned, but what about the human element, right? Like, what about the characters, the personalities, and the storylines that make up all of this?
So I think I agree with both of you when you say that like storylines draw in more viewership. They get you more invested in the fight. And I completely agree, because I feel like all of us eventually got invested in the sport because of those amazing storylines, right? And UFC does a great job with selling those and identifying those storylines. But I think eventually, once you start to get into the sport a little bit more, and once you start like going outside the storylines, once you actually start like looking at what these fighters are doing, you just develop like a much greater appreciation for, you know, like the fact that they make this walk to the octagon, and they're like literally putting it all on the line, right? You start to appreciate the skills that they like work tirelessly on. And yeah, and to me, it just like, it got to this point where sure, like storylines do help. And if there's a Conor McGregor fight, I'll be much more hyped for it than most other fights. But I I'm also very appreciative of just like fights that don't have any storylines, but they're just like absolute bangers, you know, like these people are putting it all on the line. And yeah, it's just amazing to watch that, for me at least. So for me, it's more about like skills now, you know, if that makes sense.
Was it just like that from the start as well, or is this something that's kind of evolved over time as you've grown into the sport? And you know, I mean, like the way I'm thinking about is nobody just immediately jumps into a sport and like, you know, gets everything right. So at least maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but I didn't know what an arm lock was or an armbar was or what jiu-jitsu was or things like that initially. Now I start to appreciate the skill sets of like, you know, wrestling and jiu-jitsu and taekwondo and et cetera, all these different martial arts. But when I started, I think what drove me most was like the characters and the storylines and the personalities behind all of these. So I don't know, did that evolve over time for you, or was it something that like almost immediately you were just like, let me just see how these people are kicking and, you know, the skills and all
that? It definitely is an evolution, because it's like, like I'll admit it, right? Even though I'm like a diehard MMA fan and I actually love the actual martial art behind it, like I am drawn to storylines, right? So if Conor McGregor is fighting Cowboy and if UFC is, you know, really like pushing that storyline and promoting it hard, I will get sold more on it and I will definitely want to watch that fight more. But then, yeah, like I mentioned, just like once I started getting into the sport a little bit more, once I started watching all these fighter interviews, once I started learning about what these fighters actually go through, right? Because they go through like 2-3 months of camp right before the fight. And those are like hard, grueling camps, right? Like you're up in the morning every day and you're going at it. You're at the gym 2 or 3 times in a day. And you're just like preparing for this opponent who is, you know, equally as good as you. And it's just like, yeah, once you develop an appreciation for what these guys are doing, you start to see a part of the sport that's just like not storylines, and you know, it's not like showboating and it's not like who you're cheering for.
Yeah. What about you, Shailaj? What do you think about this?
Well, I've always felt that stories are the driving force behind all forms of entertainment. So, and every kind of sport and even just other forms of media, so films, books, all of them are driven by the story itself. And even me, I mean, personally, when I watch a fight, I'm not that technically knowledgeable yet to know all the combos and all the wrestling moves and how you get out of them, how do you tackle people, what are the defense techniques. So when I'm watching a fight, I'm not watching it and thinking, oh, he's letting his guard down, doing this and doing that. It's just, I'm reacting to it, you know? Oh, he threw a punch. Oh, shit. Oh, that was nasty. Oh, that was a takedown. And then, oh, that's a guillotine. I don't know how he gets out of it. Joe Rogan explains it to me. Oh, he needs to do this. And then I thought, oh, okay, yeah, that makes more sense. So because I'm not on that level, I'm not watching it from a technical standpoint. So you could say I'm more of a casual fan. And then as a casual fan, the only thing that drives me in are the stories. And case in point, most corner fights are not fights that are like, they're not on a skill set level. They're not something that you might be attracted to. So like Conor Khabib, for example, that's a fight we all knew going into it that it's not really going to be a fight for the ages. We were hoping it could be that, but we mostly went in for the story that was built up for it. So that was. That's always been my thought process behind this. And even over time, even though now after watching it, you understand a few things. You start understanding combos, you start understanding defense, tackles, and you start understanding some submission moves. Even then, I think the story will always be a big part of it, because just creates that kind of hype and you're excited to look forward to it. So let's say today, for example, we had Paul Felder and Dan Hooker. Great fight. On paper, also a great fight. But not as much hype around it. So it's not like the entire week I was thinking about it, you know. But Conor and Khabib, I remember that phase, that whole month. It was wild. Like memes were being shared, videos, clips. People like backstage, Conor's talking this. And I was just, you know, religiously just checking out every single video and every single thought about them. I think that was, in my eyes, story is the main thing. But I wanted to actually bring up one more thing. Sameer mentioned that these athletes and what they go through is something you respect. That's also one of the reasons why I think I mean, I'm a bit conflicted. I don't know if you guys share this. So, okay, this is what I think. Any other sport or any other form of media where I have role models. So let's say, okay, sports. So there's cricket, for example, or even football, if you watch it. Any sport that you watch. Or let's say role models in acting, theater, comics, musicians. Mm-hmm. Any person I look up to, I still think that their skills are something that I can learn over time with effort, with hard work. With certain circumstances, if I had the right training, maybe the right funding, right amount of time and resources, I always feel like, you know, I can reach somewhere. Maybe I might not be, so let's say cricket, for example, maybe I might not make it to the national team, but I might reach like a state level. If I just devote like 8 hours of my day training every day, follow a plan, follow a diet, maintain my fitness routine, then I'm pretty sure I'll reach somewhere, right? You can reach somewhere with practice and procedure. Same with music. If I take up an instrument, I can learn something. Maybe I can start jamming as well. But with MMA, there's no way in hell that I ever see myself doing it. And it's not a matter of skill or hard work. It's just that I know for a fact I don't even want to enter the rookie level of it just because of the implications of the sport, right? No other sport has... I mean, I'm happy to be corrected, but all these other sports are imagined realities, right? So you have these fake rules. Football, cricket, basketball, you have these fake codes, fake rules. There's a ball being tossed around, but it's not real implications. If you miss a goal, or let's say if you just drop the ball, you drop the ball, right? Nothing major. In this, if you let your guard... Basically, if you slip, you're going to get punched in the face. You're going to get your nose broken, your leg broken, your hand broken. Or even more major injuries, get concussed or something, right? So just that having that mindset itself, and that starts right from the first level. It's not like when you reach UFC, you start getting hit. You get hit in the nose, probably even worse because these guys don't know how to throw a punch at that point. So in the first level itself, you're going to get mutilated clearly. And that's not something I can even imagine as a sport, you know, or doing that for a profession. So just getting into the sport itself is something I cannot imagine, which has so much respect for every single guy who can even do it.
Yeah.
All of them are role models for me, you know. All of these people, not because in other sports, I can look at few guys and be like, oh, he doesn't deserve his place. Oh, he doesn't deserve that talent. He's not making use of it. But in this sport, every single person who steps in the ring is doing something I can never, ever even think of doing. So it's unreachable. I don't know if you guys think the same way.
What do you think?
I completely agree. And I think that obviously for us, it's like, it's a little more scary because we don't have any of those martial arts skills, right? I feel like it's a progression. Like once you do develop that martial arts skill, and once you realize that, okay, I'm really good at this, maybe I can make money off of this. And then that's when you decide to fight. But yes, I still completely agree. I mean, that's still like, it is still like massive respect to those fighters that actually do this. Like it's funny because, like the Conor versus Cowboy fight happened recently, right? And then UFC came up with this video where they were asking Cowboy about like what's his pre-fight routine, or like how is he like pre-fighting. He was just like, I'm like sick to my stomach before I fight. Like I throw up every single time, like right before I'm about to fight, and the walk that I'm making, I'm super nervous and I'm shaking. And to me, I was like, man, this guy's fought like over 30 or 40 times in the UFC. And he still has those butterflies. So at the end of the day, like no matter what skill you have or no matter how skilled you are, like these guys definitely go through something that's like very raw and like it's very scary, man. And like, yeah, and definitely mad respect to these people. Like in a lot of these cases, like these guys don't get paid that much, right? Like if you're not a top 40 or a top 50 fighter in the UFC, you're not making enough money to justify fighting and getting punched and getting mutilated. But these guys do it, man. And just, mad respect.
Yeah, I totally agree. But I also think, I mean, this is the contrarian in me, where like any sport, you know, it happens over time. And obviously you need a certain mentality and mindset and a risk aversiveness or a lack thereof in order to be the best at the sport. But I mean, think about this, right? In school, we knew a lot of people that had done karate for like whatever, 7-8 years, people who had black belts and stuff like that. I feel like that is the same kind of base that a lot of these like world-class athletes have. Like they grow up doing this, doing it as a sport, as something that is a normal part of their childhood or their young adulthood or whatever, and then they just progress out of it. For most of the fighters that like make a living out of this, obviously there's a need aspect as well that is a big thing, where it's the only thing that they know, or that's the only way that they can, you know, do it for themselves. Especially in boxing, we've heard about this over and over again. But I feel like any other sport, as well as any discipline that requires you to spend a lot of time honing your skills to become the best at what you do, I feel like MMA also falls under that category, obviously with far more implications and consequences than any of these other sports you can even imagine. So I think combat sports is in a different league of its own in terms of those consequences. But in as much as is it something that can be trained and something that you can pick up over time, I do think that is possible and that is the case. In fact, just recently we saw John Jones fight, and I'm forgetting his name. One of you guys can help me out with this. Yes, Dominic Reyes. Exactly. Dominic Reyes, right? So he picked up the sport just a few years ago. And that's after having had he had a football career in college, and he just transitioned, and he was athletic enough and somebody who had the discipline to pick up all of these skills really quickly. So I think it's doable, but I guess you also need to have an iron will and a mentality that allows you to go get your face broken every day and still come back for it.
Yeah, that's where I draw the distinction. Like,
Go for it.
Yeah, so basically I think we're both saying the same thing, is that where I draw the distinction is that in this sport, taking an L means that you're going to go home bruised, bloodied, with broken ligaments, bones, torn muscles possibly. So you know for a fact that either you're going to walk out with your hand raised up, or you're going to go to the hospital. I mean, not always the case, but you're going to be damaged in some way. That's the only way to lose, right? Or you're going to be in pain.
And even if sometimes if your hand is raised, you still might end up at the hospital for a long time.
Even winning does not guarantee you walking away unscathed, right? So there is going to be, the moment you walk inside the ring, you should expect pain. I mean, unless you have a flawless fight where you're not even knocked once. But there is a 50% chance of you getting knocked out or whatever, walking out in pain. And then even if you're winning, there's also a chance of it, you getting hurt in some way. So that's why I draw the distinction. I haven't come across many sports like these where there's serious implications and where your survival instincts kick in and you have to be prepared to take damage, you know, and you have to, you're looking forward to a fight where you know you'll get damaged, you have to prepare for it in that sense. And then there are certain combos where you have to actually take the hit so that you can land your own punch in. And those kind of things to prepare for is something I don't. So anyway, this also leads into one more thing I wanted to share with you guys is when I watch a fight, I'm very excited at the start, but my excitement at the start becomes an equal amount of hatred right at the end because of just the situation that's created during a finish, in which most of the times there's a guy who's bloodied or, I don't know, in incredible pain. A lot of times bones are broken, someone's hand is broken, jaw is broken. and, you know, it's just, I don't like seeing the side. It becomes very cringy. So just to give you an example. So, let's take Robbie Lawler and what is this guy? Roy McDonald, right?
So Rory McDonald.
Yeah, Rory McDonald. One of the
most classic fights.
Yeah, what a great fight. But by the last two rounds, it was getting a bit unwatchable for me because Lawler was clearly, like, he was, the entire face was covered in blood, right? And you can see
he had a cut
fighting,
lip.
Yeah, cut lip. And he's just fighting through pain. He's spitting out blood, right? And at this point, it's not exciting for me anymore, you know? I mean, the fight sure is exciting and I admire his grit as such, but it's also getting, I don't know, cringe is not the word maybe, but it's just like, it's getting a bit gory, I guess. And it's not something I'm enjoying, or maybe I'm enjoying the fight element, but I'm also despising that this situation has been created and that guy is in like so much, I don't know, turmoil as such. And then it just creates this bad feeling at the end of it. Even let's say Anthony Pettis and Tony Ferguson, if you remember that fight.
Pettis
broke his hand. Even that fight, both of them were covered in blood and they were smiling, but you could clearly see that. Like at that point, I'm like, okay, you know, just somehow end this fight now. I mean, this, it's getting a bit too much, you know, someone like get in there. I don't know if you guys feel the same way.
Man, I have to say that Robbie Lawler and Rory McDonald fight is still one of my favorite fights of all time. And I kind of watch it every 2 months or so. So I don't know, the gore factor doesn't really throw me off. And I think that's also like, you know, how in movies some people prefer watching gory movies and some people don't. So I think that doesn't bother me too much. Obviously, like when an arm is being twisted and broken in like a completely, you know, difficult to watch way, like I obviously try to, you know, move my gaze. But in general, I think blood is something that, you know, doesn't bother me too much.
I mean, it's not the blood.
Yeah, so...
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, so I have like 3 points over here. One is that, the first is that like UFC is not for the faint-hearted. Like that's just how it is. Like there's going to be blood. There's going to be, you know, there's going to be broken arms, whatever you mentioned. It is not, it's not a feel-good sport if you don't like that part of it. You know, if you're not willing to accept that part of it, then it's not for you. The second thing is that, I feel like the thing that made me like feel a little better about this is that I realized that even though you might have a broken nose or you might have a broken arm and all those things are really bad for sure, at least for the average human being, right? But like, I realized that like the UFC does a pretty good job of like making sure their fighters are never really like in actual harm. Like when I mean like in actual harm, like, okay, in danger of like death or like going into a coma or something like that. So I feel like the refs do a pretty good job. The UFC regulations do a pretty good job of that. And so that kind of makes me feel better. And then the last part is I feel like honestly, fighters and their corners should do a better job of protecting themselves.
Mm.
Because one of the things that the referee tells you as soon as you start or like as soon as you're about to start the fight is protect yourself at all times, right? And I feel like fighters and maybe even corners sometimes get caught up in like, okay, I know this guy has a broken arm, but I still think he has a shot, you know, or like my nose is broken and I can't breathe, but you know, maybe I can still get the shot. And like, there's this, so like, I appreciate it because, you know, they're showing heart and like they're giving it all to like the audience. But then at the same time, you also have to like be a little smart and think about your future and, you know, protect yourself. And I think that UFC fighters and corners can do a better job of that.
Yeah, and I think, Samir, I largely agree with you on that one, but just to be devil's advocate, there is, for most fighters, yes, that is the case where, you know, like coaches and corners sometimes just push the fighter too much, or the fighters, you know, have like they have hearts of lions and are unwilling to quit. But that said, for a lot of fighters, especially the ones that are coming up the ranks and are only like in MMA in general, right? Once you made it to UFC, you're already like at a better place. But think about the hundreds of thousands of fighters that are coming up the smaller ranks. Every fight and the consequence and result of every fight leads to whether or not they can eat the next day or not. You know, so like they have to pay their agent, they have to pay their team, they have to look after their family. There's a lot hanging on it. And unfortunately in MMA, the payment schedule is like, you know, you get paid for showing up and then the remaining amount is a win bonus. And so unlike boxing where, you know, it's largely fixed, or unlike the top tier of the UFC where, you know, you have pay-per-view points or you have a large enough, you know, base anyway for showing up, a lot of fighters don't have that option, and which is why I can see many of them push the boundaries when they, you know, clearly shouldn't. So maybe that's just like another layer to add into it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree. And I also think that the UFC kind of incentivizes that, right? Like, as you mentioned, the win bonus and stuff. But I don't know, I feel like, I mean, you just, like, it's a trade-off, right? Like, you get paid $50,000 now versus you make sure your future is better, right? Potentially. And and obviously in the moment, it's a tough call to make. But I feel like there are definitely some fights where it's like, okay, this should be over now. Like, this person has no chance of winning. But their corners are still like, you know, like, you know, you can do this and like just dig deep within yourself. And at that point, it's not even really about fight strategy, right? They're just They're just telling them that, you know, like, dig deep within yourself, like, do this for your family. I think once it gets to that point, like, once, like, you know in your heart, like, this person is not going to win, I think you can just call it off. Like, it's not worth the 50,000. It's just not worth it for your future.
I think we can all agree that every single fight takes something away from a fighter in the future, right? So all that damage that they take is going to definitely accumulate over time. Anytime you break a bone and it heals up, there is obviously some kind of a... I'm not an expert in this, but I'm pretty sure that it will break easier the next time. Or in old age, you will have more brittle bones, or you'll have problems with your joints or things like that. And the people who've been concussed... I mean, Muhammad Ali is a very popular case where in the later years of his life, he became demented. I think he had...
Parkinson's,
right? And they... estimated, it's all from the shots he took to the head, right? So clearly we can all agree that fighters who step in the ring are giving away some part of their life every single time they step in. So that is something I'm conflicted about. I mean, I like the sport, but I don't want people to lose their lives or future livelihood over it. So that's one.
Right.
Also, the distinction I would make is that in a movie or like any other form of entertainment, I know it's fake. So, you know, even though it's gore involved, I know it's whatever sauce or whatever, you know. And it's fake. It's not like the actor is really suffering at the end of it. And the suspension of disbelief makes it fun. So I can keep those thoughts behind and just enjoy the character being killed on screen, because I know that the real person is not dying in that, right? So I can follow a story. In this case, I know if that someone's going to break their leg, it's going to affect them for the coming year or something of that sort. So that's something I'm conflicted about. And also the point that you mentioned about this not being for the faint-hearted. So I don't know. I mean, if there's a sport that markets itself of being not towards the faint-hearted, then what kind of a demographic is trying to build? And then what traits will you find in the people who actually like the sport? That you actually like a sport that's so, I don't know, how you aggressive, fueled by hurting other people. I don't know what the words are. This is probably a lesson in psychology, maybe. But I don't know if a sport should be aiming to be that. Because then it would speak a lot about the audience that watches it well. And then I'm not sure if the spillover effect of that would be positive or not. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think that's like a common question that has hounded MMA and especially the UFC throughout the years that it has grown, you know. And what was it? I think one of the senators famously called it human cockfighting. And this was prior to, like, you know, it getting legalized in so many different states. Now practically anywhere you go in the United States, you know, they can usually hold a fight. There are fights all around the world, et cetera, et cetera. But in the initial phase, obviously there was that whole aspect of like trying to communicate that this is a sport and that it has clear skill sets, and it's not just a bunch of people just running at each other to take just smash the hell out of each other, right? So everything, like, I think it comes down to messaging. And I think one of the big points that I want to talk about, maybe we can address this later, or maybe you can do it right now, is does the UFC or Bellator or ONE FC, whatever the promotions are, do they actually encourage fighters to be reckless, right? Like, so one aspect is the pay that we talked about. But I think the second and the more important one is, I mean, think about all the stars that we know, right? Like the big stars, the famous stars, the ones that are doing really well in the sport. They're not known to be just like skills, just come in and skillfully dispatch their opponent and go away unhurt, both of them, right? Like, you clearly see them as causing damage, getting damaged, but coming back. We love the comeback story. But then also, the stars are usually the ones who, at least in the UFC, who go at it with reckless abandon, get bonus after bonus, whether they win or lose, and they become like legends as a result. And I think Dana White has that tendency to reward fighters that put on good fights, as he calls them, rather than, you know, wrestle them down. And this is why we see people like, you know, the Justin Gaethjes and Tony Ferguson's, you know, be so popular, is because they have that kind of style where they just go at it, and, their health and the safety of the others be damned, like just throw elbows and arms and legs. And even if you're about to get knocked out, come back, still, I mean, go down still throwing, throwing your fist. So I, maybe something that we can explore is whether or not the sport inherently encourages fighters to fight in that kind of manner that makes it more popular for them.
I think that
so for me.
Sorry, Sameer, go ahead.
Yeah, I just had like a quick point to add to that. Like for me personally, like I don't mind the gore and I don't mind the broken arms and I don't mind the blood, but it's not that I love it, right? It's not that I'm excited by it. And the thing that excites me more about UFC is the reality of it, you know, like the gravity of it all, like the fact that, you know, this has real life consequences. And the other part is like the thing that excites me is the actual skills, right? Like I'm really excited by like different stylistic matchups and I'm really excited to see how one fighter uses their skills to gain an advantage over the other person. For me, it's not necessarily like, oh, this guy broke his jaw, like I love it. You know, even if it's a guy that I hate, like I would never like that. But for me, it's like I want to see how these skills match up, because every fighter brings like so many different skills that are like in contrast with the other fighter. So for me, that's the treat.
Yeah, I think addressing both your points, the heightened stakes at play make this sport a lot more exciting. So building on what Sameer said, the skills that you're deploying in this sport, it matters more because you know the stakes are higher. So let's say at the end of a football game, no matter what your display is, you still go home normally. It's just a game. Whatever you do in the game is left behind. Any other sport, I don't know if you consider chess a sport, but any kind of skills you display in any sport, it's once it's done, you go back home. But in this case, someone who's had a superior showing, you know for a fact that his opponent is going home with some real world stakes, which is broken arms, injured, bruised, probably taken out of action for a year, or I don't know, contemplating life, or just concussed, or just knocked out and he wakes up probably 2 or 3 days later. Not many sports can say that. So based on those stakes, also then building on what Anurag has said, it gets a lot more exciting when someone actually challenges the status quo, right? So someone who's very technical, someone who's cautious, it's probably the right way to approach it. But then someone who walks in with reckless abandon just makes the sport exciting. And that happens, I think, in all sports where someone's trying to not follow the formulaic way of winning a match and just walks in and tries to throw punches, knock someone out, tries to beat them with power. So this is the corner saying, right, that precision beats power and timing beats speed. But you love the people who come in with a lot of power and a lot of speed, like Colby, for example. And
yeah,
I think one thing you mentioned is how UFC is trying to promote this. I think that's always the case because these guys with reckless abandon, these guys who try to create a story or a character, are the ones who will always be the more marketable ones. And if they bring more money for UFC, then that's what they're a company at the end of the day. And all companies need to make profit. So you can clearly see how Colby actually put on a heel persona and took on this gimmick of a guy who's conservative and who's Republican. And he was not that guy. He still isn't that guy if you actually follow his life. And he's just putting this on because he knows that's what sells. And UFC is loving it. And I think they were one fight away from throwing him out. They were going to terminate his contract. And then he put on this thing and he found that he just became the most popular thing. He got an interim belt fight. He won that. And then he got a title fight. So he clearly, you can see any fighter who's watching this today can see the trajectory that Colby was going to get removed from the company. And then he put on a persona that's fake. But he's trying to, he's feeding off the crowd's hatred. And that UFC is promoting him for that because he's created like a persona that sells tickets. So I think UFC promotes it for sure.
Yeah, but also what does it say about the sport in general? And this is going back to your point about like, you know, the audience that it's targeting, right? Clearly it gets better viewers and more viewers when fights are gory and where, you know, both fighters are like completely bloodied up and, you know, completely beat up. You hear the crowd clearly booing whenever somebody tries to wrestle and hold somebody down. So it is a sport that clearly has its, the highs are the characters and the crazy fights with a lot of bleeding. The lows are the people without any personality and those that, you know, the fights tend to be quote unquote boring because, you know, people are held down or whatever. So we are seeing inherently in a sport that already is very technical and has so many nuances to it. We are seeing a popularization and a move towards commercialization. But at the same time, having followed the sport for like, what, 7-8 years, all of us, or more than that, we are also like talking about, you know, the finer aspects, like the skills and the talents and the people that don't speak out as much and still have the skill sets to beat up. So what do you think? I mean, as a business and as a corporation now, one of the biggest in the world, and thinking about profit, UFC might be chasing that easy win by getting more people on board. But what about all of us that have been following the sport for a long time and have become fans of the skill sets and the techniques and whatnot?
I don't know. I mean, Anurag, what do you think? Like, do you prefer like watching those super technical fights, or are you just like watching a slugfest?
I mean, is it a cop out answer if I say I like both? So it's
always
as much as I love like an absolute throwdown in which both fighters are giving it all, like today's fight, right? Like we saw Dan Hooker and Paul Felder absolutely give it their all, walk out bloodied, straight to the hospital right after. A great fight, and I would never say that I would not enjoy a fight like that. But at the same time, do I also enjoy a super technical fight where a Muay Thai person goes against a wrestler and gets taken down over and over again? But, you know, but there's a beauty to it because we understand how difficult it is for those takedowns to happen. So I think there is clearly I enjoy both. But now I'm going to throw a different response also. But I notice people quicker when it is far more entertaining, right? Like, I don't know if that makes sense. Mm. Because someone might put on an 8-fight win streak and I might not even know of them until they start fighting somebody in the ranked columns. But someone who comes in and, you know, gets 3 knockouts in a row, is not ranked but still has those 3 highlight reel knockouts, And I almost instantly gravitate towards them. I'm like, oh, okay, this person's doing something crazy, right? So I just think it's like the discovery phase tends to be a little longer when it's a super technical fighter that doesn't have those quote-unquote qualities that the UFC or a big promotion is looking for, whereas somebody who just comes and just does the freaking damage and, you know, quickly earns a name for themselves.
Yeah, my take on this is that people like watching things that they know they can't achieve, you know. That's what makes it intriguing. That's what makes you get respect for the people you're watching. In turn, that garners interest in watching them again. And then you're hooked onto something because now you're watching something that you feel is not commonplace. And you know there's only special professionals who can do this. And there are really artistic people who are putting the skills at play. And it's not something that a normal person can do. So that comes in more when there's a person who walks in with reckless abandon, or this person who's basically has a knockout power, because those kind of skills, not even 80% of the fighters don't have those kind of skills. So that's a very small niche of fighters as well. And those people have that disruptive quality where you know for a fact that they're not skilled enough as a fighter, but one knock can change things out. So then there's a lot of dynamics that come into play. So someone does not have to be very technically skilled, doesn't have to be GSP, for example, Anderson Silva. But if they have one good right hook, then you know that if they get an opportunity, they could even knock the best of the best out. And then that makes it more exciting. So I think that's what people like more, is because I know for a fact that if I'm watching a technical fighter, let's say if I'm watching Max Holloway, right, who's not generally known for knockout power, right? So he's a bit more technical. He throws combos, he throws jabs. I mean, his style of fighting, I consider tag fighting, right? So he comes in, throws combos, gets the points, walks out again. Izzy's another one. Izzy's another example of this. So he stays out of reach, and then he walks in, throws combos, and then stays out of reach again. So these kind of fighters are great. I mean, Izzy's popular because he's got a persona, but Max, for example, Max, the kind of streak he had, he's nowhere close to getting that kind of hype because he's a technical fighter, right?
And so I wouldn't call him entirely technical because like his whole thing was he had that Hawaiian spirit of like reckless abandon, right? Like, yes, he's clearly very technical in his stand-up game, but he would just pressure and pressure no matter what happened to him. And also, that's how he ended up, you know, losing his, you know, two recent fights, was because of that kind of heart. So, yes and no. I don't know if that makes sense.
Sorry, Sameer, I think you were saying something before I...
Yeah, so, this conversation basically got me thinking that, like, eventually what people want to be is entertained. That's why they watch UFC, right? And to me, this is why Conor McGregor is a genius, because outside his character, he's not that exciting a fighter, let's be honest. but what makes him, like, palatable to so many people is he has this charisma about him. He has this personality. He has this, like I don't give a shit attitude, you know? And once people are drawn to that, like, all he does is, like, knock people out with his technical ability. It's not like he's a reckless fighter. Like, he's a very, very smart fighter. He takes very minimal damage. And if he knows he's taking damage, I think he will either quit, like in the Nate Diaz fight, the Khabib fight, or he will, like, finish the fight quickly. Because I remember one of his coaches, like John Kavanaugh, was saying that when he got punched in the Khabib fight, when he got dropped, it was like, this is the first time that that Conor has ever gotten dropped because of a punch, right? So he is clearly a very technical fighter, and if he doesn't have this personality, he is nowhere near as attractive a fighter. Like, look at fighters like Demetrius Johnson, right? Like, this guy is...
That's the biggest example.
Quite possibly one of the most dominant fighters of the last decade. He had, like, 12 or 13 title defenses. He was practically unbeatable at that weight class. But he was nowhere near as popular as, like, Nate Diaz, who has lost several fights in his lifetime and is not nearly as skilled a fighter. It's just, like, you either are, like... Either you have this personality about you that attracts people, you, like, build this character, or you, like, you just have, like, a fighting style that people love, right? So, like, if you're, like, a Justin Gaethje and you're just, like, I don't really care what happens to me, I'm just going to go guns blazing and, like, let's see where this ends up.
Do you think, so as a follow-up question to that, so do you think then persona is a part of your skill set? Because I think Conor's persona is a part of his fighting style. So you could all argue that Jose Aldo lost because of Conor's trash talk. So that was clearly in his arsenal of tricks, right? So when Jose Aldo walked into the ring, he already had lost in his mind, I think. Which is why, I mean, we can walk through all that, but there are a lot of other examples as well. So let's say Tony's got this persona that, he's also, he's so unorthodox and he's unpredictable. And then when you walk, do you think fighters who walk into the ring, because you built up that entire persona about him, they're walking with some kind of apprehension that he can just throw an elbow out of nowhere, he can throw punches or kicks from lying down on the ground, you know? So do you think persona or what you do outside the ring is also part of your arsenal, or is completely independent? That once you walk in the ring, it's all forgotten, and what you do in the ring is what matters.
I personally think the Jose Aldo example is more of an exception, because, like, Conor's talked trash against Nate a bunch, right? And you've seen how those fights
backfired.
Conor's trash talk. Like, Conor's talked a lot of trash against Khabib, and we know how that fight happened. I think in the Aldo case, he just went for it, and clearly you could see that Aldo is being affected. And yes, like, Aldo may have lost that fight. Like, there was some element of him being, like, psychologically destroyed. But Conor actually fought very intelligent, right? Like, if you notice, like, he, like, all throughout the build-up to the fight, he kept goading Aldo to, like, you can't stand up with me, you can't stand up with me. And then Conor knew that this was coming, right? And he was ready with the counter. So,
yeah.
Would you say it backfired? Because I would say that this is Conor's skill set, that along with his fighting skills, he's got great striking skills, probably not great wrestling skills. He also has trash talking or mind games, right? And that's part of his arsenal. Like, I'm pretty sure he works on it, he practices it. And if it works, so like it worked in the Aldo fight. If it doesn't work, I mean, I feel he would have lost to Khabib regardless if he had not done the trash talking or not. Even Nate Diaz, the first time at least. It does not matter whether he had trash talked or not, because these guys would have anyway defeated him in my mind. But there are fights where it has helped him. I felt even Eddie Alvarez was very cautious against him as well, you see.
Eddie Alvarez just got like destroyed, in my opinion. Like once, like the first time he got knocked down, he knew that like, okay, this is,
it was over.
Like, this is really bad. His complete posture, everything changed after that first knockdown, if you notice. So to me, it wasn't like the mental aspect of it. Because I mean, at the end of the day, man, these guys are professionals. These guys deal with this on a regular basis. And these guys are all really, really skilled. So I feel like most people would not be as affected by psychological, you know, games. I mean, sure, it may have worked in all those cases, but I feel like that's just the exception.
I think that it's evolving, right? Like so if you remember, and actually this is a good segue as well, like the whole Conor McGregor story is something that all of us experienced, right? Like we were there watching that whole rise happen. Shailaj, in your case with the Jose Aldo thing, and Sameer, you and I, we've been talking about him way before that even. And so this is my take on this whole mental warfare aspect of Conor's game, right? Yes, it was a part of his thing, but that's what he came into the UFC with, right? So initially, everybody thought he was all talk. And so when he started knocking people out one after the other and calling the shots, right? Sometimes saying that in the second round or first round, it's over. Calling the shots, then suddenly everybody was like, wait a second. So this guy's not all talk, right? But until then, it was like everybody just got lost in that talk so much that they didn't expect him to be as skilled. But I wouldn't say it's as effective anymore. Now it's just a part of who he is. So much so to the extent that when he wasn't doing any trash talking against Cowboy, it kind of felt weird, right? Like when he was being overtly respectful and he, like we felt like he changed his persona. Like if you think about Kobe Covington, we always talk about how he changed his persona to become this like heel character, clown, whatever thing it is. But he also has this incredible skill set to back him up. But McGregor, on the other hand, it's that we associate him with that kind of brash, you know, self-confident, like trash talk, so much so that when he doesn't do it, when he for once becomes amicable or like amiable with his opponent, all of us are thrown off. So I think it's just a part of who he is, but he's popularized it so much that it's become a trend, so much so that now I don't think it'll have the same kind of effect that it had on an Aldo or all the people that Conor beat up on his rise. But kind of making a quick segue, like I want to emphasize the Conor McGregor story because it's something that none of us seem to ever get enough of. And to just remember, like just watching Conor and Cowboy, you know, I've been super critical about Conor McGregor and like all his outside the, you know, octagon antics, but when Conor fights is a, you know, it's as big a freaking event that it can get. When you see his entrance and, you know, the walk in, and it just gives me goosebumps, even though I might not like the guy as much as I did back when he was, you know, having his incredible rise. So let's talk about the Conor McGregor factor and how he still is the biggest, you know, name in the game and what our thoughts are about this person who's completely changed MMA for better or for worse.
Shailaj, do you want to go?
Yeah, sure. Always. So with Conor...
Since you were inspired by him.
Yeah, I mean, he's the guy who led me into MMA. What? So one distinction I want to... the previous point what I mentioned about Conor, it really applies in his case, is that how I see it is when you, let's say when you list down fighters' attributes, where, let's say when you have that match card, the play-by-play when they show right before it starts, where they show you the height, reach, weight, right? So in my head, it's an abstract concept, but in my head, I think trash talk is another attribute that helps him in the ring. So Conor, basically, so when you're comparing fighters, you can say Khabib has got good ground and pound. Conor's got good striking and he's got mind games, because I feel that really makes a difference in the ring as well. You know, when obviously now also you need to have complementary character styles. So Khabib didn't affect that much. Nate Diaz didn't affect that much, but you clearly saw Alvarez and Aldo as well. So that's something that's really unique that no one else was doing. People were sledging around, people were trash talking, but no one was playing mind games. Because Conor was doing things like he was coming late to conferences. Right, so he had all this plan. He had completely changed the attire you wear to conferences. So he created this high status, high anchoring persona where every single interaction with that person felt that you were in the presence of someone who's better than you, right? You are waiting for him at the press conference. He's the one wearing suits while you're coming in a hoodie or you're coming in a t-shirt. And he's speaking, right. He's got the crowd on his feet. He's funny, he's witty, he's intelligent. He's cracking jokes, you know. He's so
confident.
And
the crowd is quoting him.
The crowd is quoting him, yeah. He's become this persona already. And all of these things are subconsciously driving in the fighter's mind that he's dealing with someone important at least, right? Or someone that is a force to be reckoned with of some sort. Even though they all know deep down that Conor's fighting skills probably might not be on par with them, right? I mean, Alvarez is a wonderful fighter, right? But the kind of fight he had with Conor was nowhere close. Aldo, the same thing as well. Aldo's a champion. But the kind of fight they had is nowhere reflective of... if you just put it on paper, you would never thought that fight would happen. So that's the point on Conor. But overall, if I just look at him, this guy, I mean, there's so many facets about him that are so intriguing to people. He comes from Ireland, and the Irish people haven't had a lot of people to be proud about for the longest time. So he's got this entire country backing him in the sport, and I mean, not only is he good at the sport, he's obviously a very good fighter. Once you start comparing him technically with other fighters, sure, you can bring up deficiency. He's a very good fighter. He's very good at mind games. So he knows how to sell a fight. He's the most popular person on the card. And then that just fuels the fans even further and further and further. And he's the kind of fighter that you know for a fact he doesn't dominate a fight. But he's got that X factor where he's got that left hook, right? And he's got the mind games. So any fight I'm going to watch of his, I know for a fact I'm going to be entertained. Even though I know for a fact he might lose it. And on paper, it might not be a great fight at all. But I know for a fact that if Conor signed up for a fight, every single element of that fight is going to be very entertaining. Right from the first press conference to all the pre-fight interviews, the UFC embedded, to the fight itself, to the entrances, the post-match interview that he usually gives has one or two quotes that are always reused around. Then the... then the post-fight conference that happens after that, and then all the clips and the tweets he sends out. So just that character he's created is so, it's so appealing on so many levels that even if you're not a fight fan like I wasn't, I would still watch it just for him. It's like some personalities just, you know, they transcend the sport, and you have these in all sports. I think in basketball, you had Michael Jordan, you had Shaquille O'Neal, you had these personalities who got people in, right? In football as well, you had Maradona, you had Ronaldinho. You had these kind of characters who had a reach that just extended beyond the medium itself. In cricket as well, you had a variety of people. Obviously, you had Viv Richards, who actually was like who had a charisma that just drew people in. And that's what Conor is. He was. I'm still struggling to think of people who are kind of. Were pioneers of a sport, but if you have to see UFC's like exponential growth from when it started, because this has been around for decades, but this burst of popularity has been in line with Conor's popularity. So in a way, you can actually look at Conor being the face of the UFC because he's the one who actually got into mainstream media.
Yeah, agreed. But yeah, before you speak, Sameer, I just want to say, you're probably the biggest Conor McGregor fan that I know. So please, by all means, go in.
See, yeah, honestly, I don't have... I am a huge Conor McGregor fan for sure. But like, I thought that Shalit summed it up pretty well. Like, honestly, to me, the thing that attacks Conor the most is how intelligent a fighter he is. I mean, obviously, apart from like all the... like the character that he is and... yeah, to me, it's just like, man, this guy is, like, honestly, I sometimes feel like he is very underrated in terms of, like, his actual, like, fighting IQ and his skill set. Because, like, the reason he's so popular is because, as he mentioned, like, I talk shit, but I back it up, right? Yeah. And you can see that, like, apart from, like, a few opponents where he's been challenged, this guy has been extremely dominant in his UFC career. Like, he has that left hand, people can say that he has that left hand and that's all he's got, but he is doing so many things to like set it up, you know. He's like making reads, he's like setting those up with like feints, and he's also like ensuring how do I take minimal damage. He's like making sure that the other fighter is out of reach, so that, you know, like if I try to counter this person or if I allow this person to first punch me, this guy's not able to like get to me and I can counter him cleanly, you know. So that, like, to me, there's a lot that goes in his fighting that I feel is really, really underappreciated just because of like he's mostly a striker. And then obviously you have like the character part of it, right? Like there are a lot of people in the UFC that have characters, but like there's just something about Conor McGregor when you like hear him talk, when you like hear him do things, you can tell that, okay, this guy's not just like putting on a character, he's not putting on a show. This guy really is who he is, like claiming to be, who he's talking about. You know, it's not like a Colby Covington where it's like, man, I know this guy is saying some stuff and then it's kind of like controversial, but I know that this guy cannot be this person that he's claiming to be. But right. Conor McGregor is just like, man, this guy really is the same person. Like, he just has the same energy everywhere you watch him. And yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm just very attracted to that part of it as well.
I thought of something else, which I just want to put in before Anurag shares his take on Conor. This is something I came across when Mike Tyson gave an interview to Joe Rogan. And they were talking about how Mike Tyson was thrust into global fame, popularity in his early 20s. And he clearly says he had no idea how to deal with it because there's no template set for it. So I think the same applies to Conor as well. I mean, by his mid-20s, he was the biggest star in UFC. And I think, I don't know when he fought Floyd, when he was 28, 27 or something like that. And he had made $100 million from that itself, right? So yeah. This guy is a global superstar. Everyone knows his name by the age of 28. When you get that amount of clout, money, fame, power, influence at that age, you have no templates to work with, right? You're not, you're setting the precedent. So that in itself makes him an intriguing character because he's, you know, this guy's going to go down in history books. So every single move he makes, you are living it with him. And you know it's going to have implications because people are going to talk about it for years to come. So everyone's going to now talk about his career. And then they'll talk about, oh, remember when he fought Floyd? Like, oh, what a crazy guy. He made it in the middle of his UFC career. He just transitioned to boxing and he fought the best boxer pound for pound, right? So every single move he's making is something that's never been done before. He's not following a trajectory. And it's just so exciting to watch because you've never seen it happen and probably never happen again. These circumstances never repeat.
Yeah, and honestly, like, that's what makes, not just makes him entertaining, but also makes him so unpredictable, right? Like, we are holding our breaths to know what his next move is. Even right now, like, having lost to Khabib, having lost to Nate before, having lost to Floyd Mayweather, and coming back and winning against, you know, probably a slightly compromised Cowboy, we're still like, everybody's still talking about, okay, who is Conor going to fight next? And it just seems like we can't get enough of him. But it also makes me wonder, and going off of what both of you said, right? Yes, he is path breaking, groundbreaking, but it all seems quite well planned out, right? Like, so there seems like he seems to have set a few goals early on, saying that first I wanted to be a champ. Then I want to, you know, transition and make a ton of money fighting in boxing and then come back, you know, whatever, like whatever he's done, it could not have just been by accident. There clearly is a lot of meticulous planning and thinking and like brand building that went into it. Right. Like, so, I don't know, like, Samir, if you remember, right from the start, yeah, I mean, obviously, one of his big catchphrases, the 60 G's baby, after his first win in the UFC. But
Dana.
I remember, like, yeah,
60 G's, hey, Dana.
Exactly. So
I did it. Like, yeah.
Dude, that's really good.
Dana.
Follow Shalaj Navani's account for Conor McGregor impersonations.
Poem from Ireland. Work.
I see how your time in like the UK / Ireland has helped you out a little bit on this.
Yeah, working on my corner.
But
sorry,
but I mean, going back to this, like, I still remember right from the start after he won this, you know, like, again, I was obsessed with like watching all these fighter interviews, and you know, when there was so much hype around Conor when he first came on board. And I just remember him telling either Ariel Helwani or somebody else in an interview that the first thing he did was go and, like, I mean, apart from get a car, like, he also got a very expensive suit made, you know? And that, I like, so this guy just seems to know the A to Z of brand building, right? Like, he knew he had to dress well. He knew he had to speak well. He knew that, you know, he had to, like, call his shots, get close with Dana, you know, put on exciting fights to get to a certain point. And I just wonder how much planning and thinking went into, like, building a career that good, you know? I just find it hard to believe that it could have just happened. That he would have just gone
with
the flow.
No, I think he definitely is. He's definitely a very shrewd businessman. I mean, obviously, he's paid his dues, right? Like, he doesn't get to, like, call the shots. Like, he doesn't tell Dana to, like, do what he wants to do if he hadn't paid his dues, if he hadn't respect, right? Like, anytime you hear Dana talk about Conor, it's like, man, this guy's up for anything. And, like, if he says that he's going to do it, he's going to do it. Like, he's going to show up. Like, there's going to be, like, no weight-cutting issues or injury issues. This guy's going to show up for sure.
And also, he's fought with, like, torn ACLs a couple times.
Who? Oh, yeah.
Conor?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's fought with torn ACLs. The Chad Mendes fight was basically with a partially torn ACL.
Yep, exactly.
Hey, that reminds me. No, complete your thought on Conor, because I had a separate question.
Yeah, so he's, like, telling Dana, it's like, you know, like, this is before Aldo, like, before, like, he was a striker, he was, like, killing people, and then people are like, oh, but you can't fight against a wrestler, like, a wrestler is going to destroy you. So he's like, okay, give me Chad Mendes, you know, and then he fights Chad Mendes, he defeats him, and then he's like, okay, give me Jose Aldo, I'm going to win the belt. And then Dana is like, okay, I mean, I guess you earned it. He wins the belt in spectacular fashion. He's like, okay, give me Eddie Alvarez, I'm going to be champ. And then he's like, okay, I mean, I guess I'll give you Alvarez. The money is there, the popularity is there. He beats Alvarez. So it's like, once you have such a track record, like, Dana will be, like, Dana White or anyone will be obligated to, like, listen to this guy, right? Because clearly he is very good at, like, planning out his arc, and he knows that he can do it. And he knows, like, how to get there.
Yeah, Shalaj, you had a thought?
I mean, yeah, I had a follow-up thought. So I think if we're done on Conor, or maybe we can take a digression. What do you guys think of weight cuts?
Go for it.
Okay, while you're thinking, I can drag you out.
I think I have a response to weight cutting. I think that it's ridiculous that fighters completely exhaust themselves, kill themselves, cause permanent damage to themselves trying to make an arbitrary weight that apparently is best for them to fight in. And I think what encourages this is also the fact that they have the 24 hours to, you know, get to the fight, basically. So you have people cutting 30, 40 pounds, draining themselves out, unable to walk on one day, and then completely jacked for the fight in just 24 hours. I mean, we've seen really terrorizing videos of fighters. You know, Chris Cyborg comes to mind, and the Liverpool, the fighter from Liverpool, what's his name? Darren Till comes to mind. You know, those videos that I leaked of them having just a horrid time cutting weight. So there are conversations that are happening that are trying to address this, right? Like, they've talked about, like, spot weight checks and having a certain target of their weight achieved by, you know, a certain point of fight week, or even, like, having the weigh-in on the day of the fight that would avoid people from, like, you know, cutting prevent people from cutting too much amount of weight. But anyway, I feel like it's ridiculous that happens, and that Yoel Romero should not be fighting at 185. It's as simple as that.
There should be an age limit for Yoel Romero also.
Someone tell us
really transcends most normal human attributes. So, I don't know. But for me, like, I think I agree with you. Like, the current system is not that great, and because it clearly motivates people to fight in weight classes that they don't belong in, right? Because you have this 24-hour period and you want this physical advantage over the other person. I was reading about how ONE FC, which is like another promotion based in Singapore, that does their weight cutting, and I was really impressed by that. So I think they basically do their weighting, like, just was it just like just before the fight or like a few hours before the fight?
It's actually like they have a certain part of your body weight has to be water. So yeah, like the exactly. whole dehydration thing doesn't come into the picture, right? Like, so exactly. if you don't have a certain amount of water in your body, like it's I don't know the technicalities behind it, but it prevents this like absolutely crazy dehydration that happens before fights.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the normal way that people lose a ton of weight in a short time, fighters especially, is that they dehydrate themselves, right? Because, like, muscles are, like, made up 85% of water or something like that. So it's very easy for them to, like, lose that water weight. And, like, sometimes it gets pushed, like, a little extreme. But, like, what's awesome about 1FC is that they do their weigh-ins, like, a few hours before the fight, and they do the hydration test. So it's, like, okay, this guy is on weight, we know that. But we also know that this guy hasn't killed himself to get here. And he has a fight in a couple of hours, so he's healthy and hydrated enough to fight. So that to me makes a lot of sense. I honestly don't know why the current weighing system exists in the UFC. Maybe it's like a political thing, maybe it's had to change. But yeah, it's definitely not ideal.
Yeah, and Chalaj, what are your thoughts on this?
I completely agree with all of you. Actually, that's the reason I brought it up, to see your takes, but I agree with all of it. I was actually expecting you guys to be in favor of it, but clearly not. My quick thoughts on this is, yeah, I agree with all of these. Also, apart from the fact that fighters are putting themselves through hell, I personally don't see much benefit in them putting themselves through that hell to gain that extra pound during the fight. Because just the risk is too high, you know. So I obviously personally I've never been in the situation to see the difference of me fighting with 5 kgs more and 5 kgs less. I'm pretty sure there's a difference in power, but for a lot of fighters, the reason they lose, they start citing that I had a bad weight cut. I was really dehydrated and I didn't recover well. So recovery is a part of it. So you're playing, so there's a massive risk involved as well in that. And another element is UFC is at risk because a lot of the fights have gotten cancelled because of bad weight cuts. And that's a huge, huge, huge loss to the company. I mean, I remember Khabib, Tony, one of the four times was cancelled. I think one of the four.
Yeah, Khabib was hospitalized.
All four times.
Hospitalized, right? Khabib is constantly hospitalized. Even before the Conor fight, I think he had a stroke or something. Well, not stroke, sorry. He had fits of some sort.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of fighters go through a lot of shit. And there's always a risk of them pulling out due to a bad weight cut itself. And I've heard stories of how fighters pass out and then they knock their head on the wall and they get concussed. This is a very common thing doing weight cuts. Apparently, you just black out for a moment and then because they black out, they just...
Yeah, I mean, you just don't have enough oxygen or like water that's like in your system, right? Then cuts off the flow to your brain and that's it.
Yeah, so I've seen no reason why UFC still persists. I think they like it. I think, I don't know, there's something about the weight cut.
No, so it's actually a remnant from the whole wrestling aspect, right? So wrestling requires these kind of like big weight cuts and like, you know, people just cutting weight to make the like a specific limit and then come back. But what's really weird is like this kind of like massive issue doesn't happen in boxing. You know, like people don't miss weight that often. And so it's just a matter of like, okay, so clearly even with weight cutting, people are able to do it. But it's also just, I think it's how quick they have to lose the weight to, you know, come back to the their usual fighting weight within 24 hours. That's also the problem. But clearly 1FC is showing that it can be done in a healthy way and, you know, fighters fight in whatever category is right for them. Like Demetrius Johnson, who used to fight at 125 in the UFC is fighting at 135 in 1FC, but that's also including that healthy weight, right? So everybody gets bumped up a little bit as long as you're cutting. And so I think it makes complete sense to me. You'll still be fighting mostly the similar people that you would otherwise be fighting. So it doesn't make any sense.
I feel you get penalized for not putting on excess weight. Because if I'm someone who believes that my natural weight is 155, and I'm not going to put on more weight and dehydrate myself before the fight because I want to stay fresh, I want to stay fit, I want to stay in focus, then I'll probably be penalized because I'll be fighting someone whose actual weight is 165. Right?
175, 180,
You never know. There's no limit, right? So that then because of that peer pressure, I might also look into it and be like, okay, fine, if I'm going to fight guys who are 165, 170, maybe I should also push myself to 160, and then that's how it starts.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just it could be either or. You see fighters like Gaethje, who, you know, basically fights at his, you know, walking weight, right? And then you have people like Yoel Romero, who's clearly like 30 pounds over what his fighting weight is, and still makes the cut. So, you know, whatever it is, I think either way, having like this new methodology to make weight is only going to be better.
So just a quick couple of points. Like, since Anurag, you mentioned boxing.
Yeah.
Boxing is interesting because boxing has a lot more weight classes than the UFC, right? So,
yeah.
let's say you have, like, so in the UFC you have 155 pounds and then 170. And that's problematic for a lot of people because it's a 15-pound weight jump, right? So a lot of people are on the fence. But, like, within boxing, you have, like, 160, you have, like, 164, you have, like, 167. So,
yeah, like, really weird numbers, like, too, like, sometimes, like 167.5 and I don't know, like, just random ones.
Yeah, I'm not sure about, like, how boxing weighing works, but, like, it definitely makes it much easier for boxers to, like, weigh what they want to. But, like, that also kind of complicates things when it comes to, like, championships and stuff like that. And I'm not fully aware of how boxing handles that.
That's also why you have each fighter walk around with 10 belts, you know, like, because they won in, like, every single little category that exists.
Yeah. Okay, everyone's so I digressed you guys from Connor. I think you were still finishing some points. Are we done with that?
Yeah, I think we should move on from that in the interest of time.
Okay, I have a follow-up question then.
Two,
that since we were talking about Connor and the kind of impact he on the sport, who are some fighters you consider the best or some of the greatest fighters in MMA?
I was waiting for this question.
Yeah, spicy.
You know what, Shalaj? We're going to switch it on to you. Let's go in, like, descending order of, like, the most recent to the oldest follower of the sport.
Okay, yeah, sounds good. So my interest in the sport has been obviously retroactive. So lately I've started now going back in history. Also, it helps that the amount of time between pay-per-views and fights allows you enough time to look into the history of it. It's not like a weekly thing, right? I mostly follow the main events and things, the big fights. So looking back, I can clearly see that Anderson Silva and GSP, these are two fighters that I feel were probably pound for pound the greatest ever in the sport. But I obviously didn't watch them while they were at their prime. So now I'm slowly making it back through the archives. And these guys have like a treasure trove of history behind them. So there's a lot to get through. But I think I might end up liking them the most. But at this stage in my life, I probably haven't watched as much of either of them. In the current stage, the guys I like, Connor aside, because Connor's in his own thing, I feel. There are a lot of, it's very hard to put labels to it. But let's see. I really like the guys who break it through rather than the guys who have been dominating for a while. So we've obviously, all of us know that.
You like the underdog story.
The underdogs, the dark horses, yeah, all of those. So I'm not as big a fan of Max Holloway. I would rather enjoy Volkanovski winning over him. That doesn't make him my favorite fighter, but just to give you a context. So I really like Izzy these days. I think he's interesting. He's yet to be challenged properly. But in the current scenario, I think he's a very, very, very interesting fighter. Everything I've seen of Kamaru Usman, I really like. I think that's something fascinating. And he's just the kind of fighter you want to see in a lot of matchups, you know. And those are the kind of fighters you like, because you can imagine him with so many other fighters and you know the fight's going to be exciting, right? Not a fighter that is only dominant in one sphere and another sphere. I mean, I think I'm listening to more fighters I don't like, because now another name that came to my mind was Khabib. Now, Khabib. I'm pretty sure Khabib will come up in your fighters you like, so I'll leave that to that. Then I'll share my thoughts on Khabib. That's pretty much it. John Jones as well, I'm a bit mixed on. I think he's superior in terms of, I mean, like a complete fighter, you know. But I'm still a bit, lately his fights have been very, very I've been very mixed on them. All this the last five fights, I think he's not looked dominant at all. And you guys know I'm not a fan of DC. So I think we'll put in the current pool of fighters, just to wrap it up, Izzy would be my number one. Obviously, Connor is someone I always have a special place for. And Tony Ferguson is someone I really like as well. These guys, these would be... Oh, sorry, how can I forget the women? Actually, on top of all of these fighters, I would place the female fighter, Valentina Shevchenko. I think she is bar none. I think she's definitely my favorite fighter. She's an incredible fighter. She's got incredible class. Her personality, everything about her is such... Oh my God, I think I'm in love with Valentina Shevchenko.
Okay, so dark hair or her blonde hair?
Someone calm Shalas down.
I'm not in the hairstyle, bro. I don't know, man. She's just so good at everything. Like, her personality is amazing. But in the ring, she's ferocious. She's a monster. On Joe Rogan's word, she's an assassin, right? Take a shot every time
If she played Black Widow, I think all of us would believe that it was real.
Man, oh yeah. And then she's a dancer and she's so soft spoken, so respectful. Oh, this.
And she speaks five languages. Oh, what, man, the hell?
Valentina, if you're listening, projecting it out in the world, just know that I'm there for you.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Shalaj. Yeah. A man shooting his shot.
Hope she's listening.
So I'll go now, because Sameer, you're the most experienced out of all of us. I think my all-time favorite fighter has to be Dominic Cruz. Absolute pioneer, badass. Like, no one could touch him in his prime. And I think I am also a sucker for the underdog story. Today we had one with Tyson Fury coming up from all his odds and like all the downs that he had in his life and career to beat Wilder and become the heavyweight champion again. But that's the story of Dominic Cruz. Like, this guy not only invented a whole new style of fighting, but apart from that, goes through four massive injuries that could have sidelined anybody. Excuse me, got too excited there.
Bless you.
So, yeah, not only comes back from it, wins the championship that was stripped off of him again, and beats perhaps performance-enhanced TJ Dillashaw at his prime. It's unreal. That guy's one of the best to watch. He's one of the greatest minds in the sport, and I just can't wait for him to come back and at least put on one or two more fights. Like, I think he still can. He still got it. When excuse me, I can't as a fan help but hope that he makes a return. But that's Dominic Cruz right up there for me. With John Jones, I have to say this: like, I still think that he is perhaps the greatest talent MMA has ever had. I'd even put this up there, right? Like, take out his last three fights, and let's say he lost all those three, right? Even then, if you just look at his resume, I don't think anybody comes even close to having such an incredibly stacked resume with them.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, and so with all our recent criticism about his performances, about the way, he's been fighting recently and all of that, I'm like, man, cut him some slack. We could take out his last five fights even, and still this guy would have beaten every single former champion in his division, all of them at their peak. And this guy was in his early 20s at that time. Like, that speaks volumes to me. So he's always going to be up there. But I also, because he's been part of this last decade, I consider him to have had his prime time at that stage. But current crop, I'm a huge Justin Gaethje fan. I love Tony Ferguson. You can actually name anybody in 155 right now, and I probably am a fan of them. That weight class is just stacked. It's just wonderful to watch. It's also the weight that I walk around at, so I'm like, more or less attuned to the, these are like my people, my weight kind of thing.
Drags versus Khabib.
Versus Tony Ferguson, can you imagine?
Yeah, just be bloodied all over. Amanda Nunes, I think, is, again, at John Jones level. Look at her resume. She's beaten everybody. How can you not love her? But then we also have the Nate Diaz's, basically the bad boys of the sport, right? The Masvidals and all of them. Like, they just have so much character. They come to fight. They really don't care a damn. And they can put on shows like nobody's business. And I'm so happy for Masvidal's rise. Yeah, it's a good time to be a fan of the sport, man. Like, I mean, almost every week recently, every big pay-per-view recently, we've just been like losing our minds about how good the fights have been, how well stacked the cards are. So these would be my names, I guess.
Nice. I'm super pissed that he stole Dominic Cruz.
Dude, you know I've been a fanboy. I've been a massive fanboy. Oh, yeah. Ever.
We have been co-massive fanboys.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I mean, obviously, like I mentioned, Dominic Cruz. He's just like, he's a very inspirational fighter. Like, he has a very unique style of fighting, and he brings something very, very different to the table. Something that makes his opponent stumble a lot. And I also like the fact that when he does lose, like, he is possibly one of the most graceful and like knowledgeable people about that. Like, the way he handles a loss is just incredible. It is inspiring. Like, he really does lose like a, even though that hasn't happened very often. I do hope to see him back soon. I think the absolute goats of the sport for me would be Anderson Silva and John Jones. Anderson Silva for obvious reasons. And I think John Jones is, like, I thought about this quite a bit recently too, and I know that his fight against Dominic Reyes was a little controversial, against Santos was a little close. But, like, you have to understand that this guy has been a champion for, like, the past 8 years, right? And, like, at this point, there is a very clear blueprint that people that are rising up can use to, like, beat him. Even though it's really hard because he is an incredibly all-rounded and incredibly skilled fighter. So I think that we do need to cut him some slack there, because we haven't seen a champion this dominant, right? And even Johnson said the same thing. It's like, I'm still trying to figure out like what these guys are like trying to do, you know, like, because these guys already know what I do. So until I figure out what they're trying to do, they have the upper hand that way. So I just think that and as you mentioned, like, his resume speaks for itself, right? So, like, for me, John Jones is the GOAT. Like, there is no question about that as of right now. In terms of other fighters that I like currently, this might be a little controversial, but I really, really like Henry Cejudo.
Do you have a Triple C fanboy in the house?
Triple C fan. I love Triple C.
Did you know he won an Olympic gold medal?
I do, yeah. I heard it here or there.
I mean,
in all honesty, like, think about what this guy has done in the past year or two. This guy has beaten Demetrius Johnson. That in itself should, like, tell you how fucking incredible this guy is. Like, Demetrius Johnson, the guy that
was a PED DJ Dillashaw right after.
PED, he knocked out droided DJ Dillashaw, who was a champion in another weight class, within one round. He beat Marlon Moraes, who was very clearly the number one
killer,
who was very dangerous.
Killer, yeah.
Yes. And that too, that was a very impressive fight, because Moraes had his number in the first round. But then Cejudo picked up something in the second round, and then he absolutely destroyed him, right? To me, that was just like a marvel to watch. I love it when stuff like this happens, because it highlights to me the intelligence of fighters. Yeah. So for me, Henry Cejudo is definitely one of the best in the sport right now, as much as
I guess it's hard to disagree with you, but oh my god, I can't stand
but
the
everything else why
shit that he pulls.
Hey, it's not that bad.
Sameer, you used to like Luke Rockhold, right? I can see the school you come from.
I used to love Rockhold, and if he gets back to his glory days, I will still love him. I do think he is possibly one of the most all-rounded, skilled persons in that division. Oh. But I don't know what
has happened. Except when a left hook comes at him.
Yeah. Except any shot that comes at him these days, right?
Oh, yeah. No.
I honestly think that Bisping fight ruined him, like, for quite a while. It's unfortunate, too, because, like,
Just a small digression. I've noticed that one knockout often changes the fighter. Even Chris Weidman had the same thing, right? And I think when Anderson Silva, after he's lost to Chris Weidman, you start noticing that anytime someone gets knocked out once, they're not the same fighter the next time. Even Ben Askren, another recent example.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly always thought, I do agree with you in general, but I always thought like Weidman, if we're talking specifically, I thought Weidman was a little overrated. Given that like he did win against Anderson Silva, but it was definitely not when Anderson Silva was in his prime.
Maybe at his prime, but also, exactly. Like it was just him messing around.
But he won the rematch also.
Well, Anderson broke his foot in that. So,
it literally
went in two pieces. Yeah,
I mean, so.
even though it was like it was because of a kick that Weidman checked, which is something that he did, right? So it's like Silva broke his leg on a freak accident.
Silva's never been the same, right? So even Rockhold.
Yeah,
after
but
Bisping,
he was also like towards the tail end of his career at that time. But Rockhold is still pretty young. Like I don't think he's too old yet for the sport.
Yeah, but I think Rockhold is done, honestly. Like, yeah. I don't think he has much of a future in either division. And he has a pretty successful modeling career, apparently. He models for, like, Ralph Lauren
or something
like that.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, who else?
Let's see. Tony Ferguson, I absolutely love. I just love everything about Tony Ferguson.
I think Tony is the people's champ, right? Like, I think if you are, like, as long as you're not, like, an absolute newbie into the sport, you tend to, and if you follow the sport a decent amount of time, like, you tend to like Tony Ferguson, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. He's like this amazing mix. To me, he's like this amazing mix of, like, reckless abandon and incredibly technical but orthodox. So it's like, this guy's like putting it all on the line, but he's actually super technical.
Super skilled.
Are there guys you feel like everyone considers them champions or legends, but in your books, they're not yet champions until they go through something? Like Khabib for me and DC also.
Mm-hmm.
These are two guys in my eyes, they're not legends until they get one or two big fights in their way. Khabib, so if he defeats Tony, there's no doubt in my mind he's a legend of the game. Currently, he's an amazing fighter, but he's not a legend because I feel like his lineage of fighters has not been as challenging as a lot of other people. He's obviously defeated a lot of good fighters, but he just needs to get Tony under his in his books, and then he's the legend. Same with DC. DC lost to John Jones twice in my eyes, and Stipe as well. And in fact, I think his last five fights, if you remove the eye pokes, I think they would have all gone differently. So these are two fighters that everyone considers like legends, that they're one or two fights away in my book.
I think DC, I don't agree with you on DC there because he cleaned out, like apart from John Jones, he has cleaned out the light heavyweight division. Like he's beaten Rumble Johnson twice. Like in dominant fashion. And he has, the fact that he won any fight in the heavyweight division to me is astounding because, like, especially against Miocic, this guy is the most successful champion in heavyweight history. He has a massive physical advantage over DC, and DC knocks him out.
Yeah, but like, that fight I thought was controversial because of the eye pokes. Even the next fight, there was a lot of eye pokes.
I mean,
I don't know.
His character itself. He cheats eye pokes. He had a weight cut, which is controversial. He was holding the towel. Man,
No, but I honestly think like the eye pokes bit is like an issue in the entirety of the sport. Not to be a DC fanboy over here, but I think it's just a common issue. But point
guy,
well taken.
KFC guy.
The thing about DC is like the reason he reaches out so much of his fingers is that he has, especially when he's fighting in heavyweight, he has a huge reach disadvantage, right? So he has to make the reads on like what the right reach for him is and stuff like that. So I sympathize with him a little bit over there, but I agree that he should probably keep his fingers closed.
Yeah. So boys, before we wind down, and I have to be careful about us all overstepping our allotted time, if I may. But one more character I want to talk about before we wrap up for the evening, and that is the Godfather, Dana White. So we can't do justice to an episode or a podcast about MMA and UFC without talking about the big man. So controversial in all aspects, no doubt. Whose word cannot be taken for shit, no doubt. But the person who perhaps single-handedly saved this sport and made it as great as it is. So thoughts on Dana White before we wind down, boys.
Oh, okay. Any thoughts?
Yeah, always the rookie goes first, is it? All right. Yeah, my thoughts on Dana is, so this is how I compare him. I always compare him to Vince McMahon, right? That's one guy I can see a template for, and who's the head honcho of this industry and who's pretty much launched this sport into the world. Dana's obviously very different from that guy, but one thing that stands out is you can see he's a student of the game. So he loves fights, and that's very important. Often, and I don't know why this tends to happen, but administrators of sports tend to be people who love money and power more than the sport itself, and the sport starts getting affected. But in this case, you can clearly see the guy knows fights, knows moves, knows combos, gets very technical. He gets pissed out about small things like, I think there was this fight, Derek Lewis versus Francis Ngannou, yeah, where they didn't fight at all, right? And this guy was fuming at the end of it. So that's what you want to see, right, from your chairman, Hugh. He should be as passionate about the sport as the fans. So that I like. Now, obviously, he's going to have a difference of opinion about a lot of things, and then he's called out on that. He's obviously had comments on fighters that people don't like, comments on referees, judging, and there's going to be controversy about that. I'm fine with all of it. I think he does a great job doing his job. It's not easy to be the chairman of the UFC, to handle so many fighters. And I think his main role is man management, which he does really well. A lot of fighters get along with him well. I find that obviously there are issues. He has issues with fighters, but I think if people try to poke him, then he bites back, which is the right attitude in a sport like this. So like Chris Cyborg and him had this kind of a feud with reporters as well. With Ariel, he's had a lot of issues. So he's had issues. But I don't think he initiates them, you know. So I think he's very good at man management. A lot of fighters can easily approach him. Everyone's comfortable with, oh, I need to chat with Dana about my future and things like that. There is some resentment that he's ultimately obviously going to chase the money and the hype, but they know he's a fan of the sport as well. So for example, recently when Aldo and Marlon Moraes had the fight, he's still giving Aldo the championship shot, even though Moraes won, because he knew the judging was shit, right? So these kind of things I respect. Like, I like that in a chairman. I think he's a very good template. He does a good job. It's not an easy job what he does. And he's also quite hilarious in his interviews, conferences. He looks very, he's very laid back, very chill about it. And that's something you like to see, right? This guy who just has fun with his job. He looks like he's enjoying it, living the dream, makes jokes about fighters, and he's honest. He's not diplomatic about it. So he tells you what he thinks. Someone tells him, give me your thoughts on this guy. Oh yeah, that guy looked like shit. I think he should retire. Luke Rockhold. Samir, are you listening? And something else. And he's like, oh yeah, this guy has like proved himself, or he's the next thing, or she's the monster. So I like it, man. This guy, he does a very good job.
Yeah, I mean, I second it. I definitely think that he has been more of a controversial figure in the past, but I feel like he has grown a lot and he has improved a lot, and I don't know, he's just
the temperament
like much
seems
more
to have
mellow.
Set in, you know?
I mean, it's probably also because like he's making a lot of money recently and UFC
yeah,
is just like skyrocketing for sure. I mean, for me, like, he's an absolute genius, right? Like, he saw something that very few people did, and he got it to this point where like it's one of the most talked about new sports now. So he's an absolute genius. Like Sharaj mentioned, he's also like very honest in his opinions. So it's not like, sure, I mean, there is some bias when it comes to like Conor, there's some bias when it comes to Khabib, but like at the end of the day, like what people need to realize is that it's not a complete meritocracy, right? It's show business, and the goal is for him to like successfully run the business is to like sell as many fights as possible. So yes, if a fight is selling less, he's not probably going to make that fight over a fight that's going to sell more, but maybe that person doesn't deserve it. So yeah, and I think he also makes the company more equitable, and I also like him being like the one face of the company just because of how like accessible he is, and like he does all these conferences and answers like all these questions. So it's definitely good to see someone who's at the head of the company that's like equitable and you can kind of like look to for like opinions on what's happening in the future. Yeah,
that's true. But what do you guys think about, you know, maybe some of the upcoming fights, any trends that you guys think for 2020? I know we can go on talking about MMA forever, and I feel like we still have like about 4 hours in us to just chat and catch up on every one of these different aspects. Easy. But in the interest of winding this down, let this be our last question.
Yeah, actually, I have a lighter question to be the last question. But anyway, we'll finish this question.
Done. We'll run by your lighter question.
Thanks, bro.
Shailesh, now you better make it light.
it's a great question. Anyway, not to hype you guys.
Yeah. Now I'm really excited.
But it's amazing.
But anyway, trends in 2020, fights that you guys are excited about. What are you guys looking forward to?
Tony versus Khabib, man. That for me, like, that just like trumps every other fight.
Yeah, that's like my drug right now. Every night I'm like, Tony, Khabib.
Oh, whoa.
It's been in the making for like 5 years, and this fight should have happened a long time ago.
I don't know what just happened on drug. We'll move past it. But yeah, cool.
Yeah, let's just ignore what just happened.
That's what I usually do anyway.
You know what? Okay, I'm looking forward to Tony Khabib. Just to add something to Sameer's, as much as I'm looking forward to it, I'm also looking forward to the potential of what happens next. Is that if Khabib wins and then Conor has another good fight, then we have a rematch, which I think will be the biggest fight ever. And even if Tony wins, then at some point he's going to face Conor, Justin Gaethje, which are also going to be great fights. And Khabib is also probably might face Conor. Might not have the same impact that way, but Tony and Conor is also an amazing fight. So, I mean, this fight in itself is one of the most anticipated ones. Plus, the potential it holds for the future is also amazing. Sorry, Sameer, carry on.
No, yeah, I mean, completely agree with that. But for me, it's just like the two absolute best in their division for a very, very long time. And it's a very, very intriguing matchup stylistically. Like, probably the heaviest challenge that Khabib is going to face stylistically, because you have someone who not only has a ground game of his own, but also thrives when he's on his back on the ground, you know?
So he hopes to get taken down so that he can attack them.
Exactly.
Also, it feels like Destiny's does not want it to happen, you know? Like, 4 times it's been cancelled. So it's like,
I think Destiny just wants it to happen now. Now it's when the stakes are the highest, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it can't be higher right now. Like,
what if this is not the right time?
Oh my god.
Yeah, what if like you need one more year of build up?
Then I'll just completely lose hope. Like, that's it. No more staying up and not thinking about this fight.
I feel like if Khabib does not make it to this fight, he should be stripped.
I think that'll be too quick though. I think they'll give him one more pass before they strip him.
But it's like, is he really going to go through his career without facing Tony? That just sounds like criminal.
Then he doesn't deserve it, yeah.
Yeah, agreed. But the thing is, these two haven't been trying to duck each other. You know, it's just been, they've been wanting to fight each other forever. And it's circumstances. And like the most recent one was the freak cable accident with Tony just tearing up his entire, tearing off his knee from his, you know, everything. So let's just hope that fight happens. Any other fights, guys, that you're looking forward to?
Oh, Usman versus Masvidal.
Yeah, I was waiting for someone to say that. Yeah,
that one's going to be huge, huge, huge.
Yeah, I mean, anything like now, I just... What's that? Say that again?
Classic wrestler versus striker fight.
Seriously, man. You know, another fight that I'm really looking forward to, and it might not happen in 2020, but I hope it does, is Shevchenko versus Nunes 3. I think the first two were just so close that now, with both of them having become almost indestructible in their own weight classes. It just calls for a 135 matchup again. I just feel like you cannot. You know, the problem that I face right now is like, yes, Amanda Nunes is the GOAT. Yes. But she's not just as undisputed as everybody says she is. At least this is my opinion. I feel like with how close the two Valentina Shevchenko fights were, that it's a disrespect to her skill set that people are not speaking of her in the same level as Amanda. True, she has two belts, no doubt about it. But that 135 belt very well could have been Valentina's if she got through, you know, Amanda at some point.
I mean,
point,
I actually thought she won the second fight.
It was a split decision.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, both were split decisions.
There's another fight in the future, not this year, which would be Izzy versus John Jones at some point.
I would have been more excited about it had John Jones been like torching these recent guys.
Dude, John Jones is gonna destroy his.
Nah,
let's
I don't
be honest.
Think so. Nah.
Current John Jones?
Nah.
Yes, current John Jones is gonna destroy Izzy.
I doubt it, man. I doubt it. Nah. I think what Dominic Reyes exposed is that with a lot of pressure and heart, and good striking skills, you can like kind of figure out Jones.
Yeah, but Izzy is not a pressure guy.
He could be.
Well, I could go on about why I hate Izzy forever, but yeah.
We have a hater in the house. But like, you hate Izzy, but you like Triple C. Like, what is going on, man?
This guy, man.
Okay, so in a very quick nutshell, my problem with Izzy is that I know it's like not fair to say this, but he has a huge physical advantage over anyone here.
Yeah. Oh, John Jones is like this underprivileged kid, no?
No, I mean, John Jones, Dominic Reyes, he was like pretty much physically matched up with John Jones.
Yeah, and then people argue that John Reyes won the fight, so your point being?
I mean, that is debatable, right? But the fact that he still like went up to him and managed to like, you know, fight it out, like maybe he won, maybe he didn't. But like for Izzy, it's just like he's fighting all these super short, like not long enough dudes and like people are making a huge deal
about it. That can't be the only factor, though. I mean, like look at Yoel Romero, he's jacked. But if you had to talk about size mismatches, Robert Whittaker against Yoel Romero was a big size mismatch and Whittaker still took him out. But now, you know...
Whittaker's taller and longer than Romero. It's just maybe there's a weight difference. Like
Is he taller than Romero? I don't think so.
I'm fairly certain.
I mean, anyway, we all agree that Romero is a specimen and should not be in that weight class. So,
yeah.
So one thing I'd say is that I love you. I love you, Shalit.
I love you.
I'll see you soon, boy.
All right, Shalit.
What's his age? Take a guess. Wait, guys, take a guess. What is Yoel Romero's actual age?
44, right?
Actual age, like real age, not the one he declares.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, I would say like.
More or less?
You guys thinking?
Go for it, Chalice.
No, I thought his actual age is like his actual age.
No, but like, so you know, like Afridi declared later that he's 5 years younger than he had declared his age for because
he's serious?
Yeah, because you know, in sport, what happens, especially in cricket, is that people who want to play under 19 at the age of 23 because they have an advantage and then they'll get picked in the Indian team, you know. So they declare the age, so they change their passport age to be like they're 19 years old when they're actually 23. Rashid Khan from Afghanistan, known for this, he looks 28 and he's currently 21 or something.
Oh, you think he's also like not that young?
Could be. I mean, listen, all I'm saying.
Wait, so Afridi admitted that he is older
book.
Than he was.
Yeah, after he retired from cricket, so there's no implications, right?
Yeah, but he played at such a high level still, man.
Yeah, and even now people keep saying that about Rashid Khan. People joke about it also, like David Warner jokes about it. Anyway, not to go into other sports. So I feel I've seen a clip of Yoel Romero in the 2000 Olympics, right? And he's jacked there. I don't know, man. I don't know. So clearly this 19 years from there itself. So he's minimum 19, but he's obviously a grown man in that video. So he has to be at least 20 there. So minimum though, he has to be 40. and he's declining to be 44. I don't know, man. This is tough. It's very tough. But it's incredible what he can do at his age. He's doing backflips.
I mean, regardless, he's 40, right? I think we can all admit that he's
minimum 40. Easily.
Actually, just saw him freaking backhand, you know, spring and like go into a split in a freaking jeans at way at the press conference.
His hat was still on.
This guy,
right?
What's that?
He had was wearing a hat with a beret.
Yeah, he was wearing a hat.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, I have two questions. I'll save the lighter question for the end. Just answer in one line.
It is the end. Throw it to us. Give it to us.
No. Okay, one question which we didn't cover, but only answer in one line, no justifications, is which is your favorite fight? Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
One line.
All time?
All time. I mean, okay, just too much pressure, right? One of the fights you rank on the top. Who wants to go first?
How do you select one?
Silence.
Man?
I'm thinking, man. I'm thinking.
I'll say my one line. I'll get out of the way. It was Izzy and Kelvin Gastelum.
I think it's a recency bias, my friend.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
but I'm also a new fan, no? So
recency bias. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna say two.
For me, okay, go.
Okay, two. I think the one that I like to most. Return to is obviously the Rory McDonald and Robbie Lawler fight. I think that's one that I just can't stop watching. But I think overall, I think the best fight that I've ever seen is probably Dan Henderson and Shogun. Shogun.
Oh, that was
dude, that was a classic fight.
One
I think,
line. One
I
line. Think sorry.
Shit.
Okay. If I was only to pick one fight. John Jones versus Alexander Gustafsson.
Okay.
Good one.
Okay, now this is my question.
That had me like... Yeah.
Okay, I have now the light question to wind it up. And you guys can give context to this, not an issue. So which is your favorite trash talk?
No, I won't give you context. What
which
are you
going
to do?
Okay, don't give it. Which is your favorite sledge, your favorite trash talk from the entire history? Like favorite dialogue, favorite quote.
I mean, it has to be Conor McGregor at this point.
Which one? You can say multiple ones also if you like more than one.
Does it have to be like trash or does it have to be just like catchy?
I mean, whatever. Which is your favorite quote? Yeah. There's no rules to this.
Okay. My favorite is, we're not here to take part. We're here to take over.
Oh yes. That's a good one, man.
Gucci Mink.
Got a whole country behind him, man.
Anurag, you got one?
It's expletive ridden, so I'm not going to say it, but...
No, say it. No, I mean, we haven't done anything.
It's basically Tony Ferguson calling out McGregor twice, using the same things. Literally the same. It was like you could cut and paste the press con, whatever speech thing from... his interview from beforehand and in the current fight, and it's still the same thing. It's like, bro, it's word for word the same thing.
Okay, so it's so tough to pick because Connor's got some great ones, right? Obviously, who can forget who's that guy, Jeremy Stephens, and also that guy.
Huda.
Yeah,
Huda,
bro, I'm gonna curse, but I'm gonna save the curse for my favorite one.
No one said you can't curse.
Man, you put rules anyway, and then obviously
you've broken them.
And
good boys for today.
And more than who's that guy? I used to love, break out the red panties. My favorite. And this is surprising.
It was to what was it?
Dos Anjos. Yeah.
Dos Anjos.
Yeah.
Dos Anjos. Yeah.
Say, baby, we did it.
Baby, we did it.
Anyway, but this is my favorite one. It's so absurd. Is not with Connor, but Connor's in the video. So just to give you guys context, I just love this whole context. So it's the Ultimate Fighter, right? Connor's bullying Uriah Faber, right? He's just bullying him end to end. And Faber's not saying anything back. And then Cody Garbrandt is like, I'm going to say something. And Connor's like, go on then. And this guy just walks up to Connor, shoves him. Fight breaks out. All the teams are punching each other, fighting and all that is happening. Chaos is ensued. Okay, and one guy from Connor's team just steps in front and is like, looks at Cody Garbrandt and he says, take care of your underwear, man.
Underwear.
I'm gonna fuck you. That's the greatest thing I've ever heard. And who says that? Take care of your underwear, man. I'm gonna fuck you. And the funnier part is that everyone is so lost at that comment that Uriah Faber goes, what? Just that whole context. What? And Cody Garbrandt is like, wait, what? Is he insulting me? What is happening? This is the greatest scene I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, shit. That's a good one. And on that note, boys, thank you so much for joining. It was awesome. And I can't wait to do more UFC and MMA related podcasts with you.